This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in. It's Sports Daily. We got another hour going for you here on a Friday. Glad to be here with you. Jalen Thompson will be in a little bit later to talk some Kansas City Royals, talk us off a ledge maybe a little bit. I'm not quite to the ledge. I'm just annoyed. So we'll get to the latest on what's being said. That's the vibe in the locker room, all those things coming up. We've got the Chiefs talking yesterday with the NFL draft looming. Let's get into this, Tommy. We'll start right here with the Chiefs, and maybe we get into it and continue it into the next segment too. What? So you sent me something, and I kind of read through the quotes. What was it? The Chiefs saying that they only feel good about what 12 or 13 players in the first round or first round grades?
Brett Veach said yesterday that the Chiefs have around 12 to 13 players with first round grades in this year's draft, which would mean that when, you know, they get to number 31, if one of those guys is on the board, then at least they've graded them out in the first round. And then Brett Veach has what he calls the secondary wave. That's the late first round, early second round. And there's a lot of guys apparently in that wave of players that they like.
So that's a smokescreen, I think. So, A, why would any GM tell you what they think of players before the draft? Honestly.
Well, he didn't go specific. He didn't say guys.
But to me, that's a little bit of a strategy insight, because what are you doing when you would tell somebody that? We really probably only like 14 or 15 guys. We really like that second tier. So when I hear that, I hear we want to trade down, right? That's what that would lead me to believe based on what he says. Based on what he says right there, it would make you think, yeah, they could trade down because they feel better. They think there are a lot of guys in that secondary. They don't really have first round grades on very many players anyway. So that's what you're trying to say when you say that. And then I think, why on earth would any GM ever tell you what they actually think before the draft? They wouldn't. That would be stupid. Like, you can't do that. Like, put yourself, think about your own fantasy football. Are you really going to go talk up the player you love to the guy you're trying to trade with? So I hear what he's saying. I imply what he's trying to do. And I think it's a smokescreen and they're going to trade up. I thought that yesterday. I sent you that yesterday. I read this morning Matt Miller of ESPN reporting that he's hearing the Chiefs do have a player that they really like pointed out, and they do want to move up to go get them. And it's probably a left tackle. So like that, that was Matt Miller this morning on ESPN.
Okay.
So I
take the comments from Brett Veach a different way than you do. I took it as, hey, when we get to number 31, there are a handful of guys that we really like. Like, we have not pinpointed one of them specifically that we're going to go after. We don't have our sights set on one or two guys. We have 12 or 13 in the first round that we like, that we've graded out as a potential first rounder. And if any of them are still available at 31, then at that point we'll evaluate to take them. That's the way I took it. I didn't take it as we don't like anybody, and so we're going to trade down or trade up, or it's a smokescreen.
No, I'm not saying they don't like anybody. I'm saying they like a lot of guys, so they'll just trade down to get draft capital.
Yeah, that may be. I took it more at face value when I read it than you did. I saw it as, oh, cool, they've got options when it gets to 31. There's a lot of different guys that they like, and if any of them are available at 31, then they'll feel good about taking them. That's just the way that I took that comment.
Yeah, that's the point, I think, of why you do these things. You want the most noise you can get. I just think, like, to me, it's a draft where they can move up. Because they brought basically everybody back, so they have the ability, they can afford to do it. It's always been about how do they feel about certain players. Do they like a player enough to move up and go get them? So I hear that as, yeah, you know, because if you're going to trade up, the last thing you want anybody to know is that you're going to trade up. You don't want whoever it is you would perceive that might also be interested in that. But let's take the Texans, for example. The Texans, who are in desperate need of a tackle. They traded away Laremy Tunsil, right? They are going to need an offensive lineman too. They're going to be drafting later in the draft, like the Chiefs. The last thing you want is for the Texans to have any indication that you might be wanting to get ahead of them to take a player that they like, because then what would they do? They would then get aggressive and try and trade up and do that. What you do want is at the last minute in that spot, you to make that call and be like, here's what we'll give you. We're ready to move up. And they don't have a chance to react to it. So that's why, like, for me, when I hear those comments, again, why would a general manager ever play their hand to the media at a media briefing before the draft? They wouldn't. You wouldn't in fantasy football, right? You wouldn't do that. So I think it's an option. Will they do it? Again, it's based on the player. This isn't, by all accounts, like a tackle-heavy class, but that doesn't mean there aren't good tackles or that the Chiefs don't love a particular player.
I'm sure they do.
Mel Kiper Jr. doesn't think it's a tackle. You know, like, so it doesn't really matter. It just matters, like, do the Chiefs like somebody enough to go make that kind of move? And we don't have their board. We don't know that answer. But that comment tells me it's on the brain. I think there's a real chance they move up. And I've always thought that.
Yeah, my biggest concern if they go left tackle or offensive line in general in the draft is that is the one Achilles heel in the draft for Brett Veach. I mean, more so than anything else. There have been some swings and misses. There's been some swings and misses in other positions in the Brett Veach era. But by and large, he's been a pretty good drafter, especially late in draft. Yeah. He's been able to find diamonds in the rough and develop them into really good players. But there's a pretty decent sample size that the Chiefs have not been good at evaluating and picking tackles or an offensive lineman out of the draft. And so that would concern me if they have identified, I don't care if he's the top left tackle on the board in the first round nationally, that would concern me if the Chiefs are like, hey, we're going to give up whatever we need to move up and get a guy like that, simply because it's not even a knock on the guy. I don't know if it's Josh Connerly Jr. or whoever it is. It's not a knock on the guy. It's just the fact that the Chiefs have not graded out offensive linemen very well early on in drafts. That's been an area they've really struggled in.
They've missed on a lot of positions early in drafts. I mean, they hit too, but they're kind of a boom or bust, you know, with the Chiefs. It's either like you get Mahomes or Trent McDuffie, right? Or you get Felix Anudike Uzama or Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like, they're a little bit boom or bust there, but that's, you know, like, it's okay because they're such they're such a good drafting team in the middle to late rounds that it's made up for it, right? It's not even a big deal. And you take that. It's fine. Like, the Cowboys are a great early round drafting team, and they're not so great later in a draft. Like, there's lots of different ways to being good at the draft. And the Chiefs, by and large, have been good at it. I would agree with you there. Their evaluation of left tackles has not been good. But what I would ask you then is, how much opportunity has there been at that position? You know what I mean? Like, it feels like they just continue to try to make something more than it is. And so if you evaluate a true college prospect with that kind of grade, I do think that's different than going to get Jawan Taylor and trying to convert him to a new position.
Yeah, I think I do think that if they go and they draft a left tackle, trade up for one and go that in the first round, I do at least feel like there's a little bit more of a little parachute, you know, for them. Like, there's a safety net.
Oh, yeah, they don't even have to play right away.
Right, like, because they've got Jalen Moore now. And, I mean, it could be a committee. It could be left tackle by committee, because you have so many guys that they have tried. Like, Wanya Morris is still on the roster. Kingsley Suamataia, I know that they want to use him at the guard position, it sounds like. But they've got him on the roster. You know, they've got other options where they don't necessarily – they wouldn't have to rush whoever this left tackle is right away. Now, if Jalen Moore turns out to be a bust and it doesn't work for him, then there's going to be more pressure to get a guy rolling. But it's not like a situation like we saw entering last year, where they didn't have a veteran left tackle on the roster and it was Morris or Suamataia from day one, and neither one of them worked. There'd be a little bit more of a support system around whoever this rookie would be coming in to at least let that person grow into the role.
And you're going to need a right tackle likely after this season too, right? Like, because Jawan Taylor's not long for the Chiefs, right? He's just, you know, it's contract right now that holds that back.
Yeah, so they'll get out of that contract as soon as they absolutely can.
Right. So it makes sense. I thought that when you sent me that note yesterday based on that, and I kind of read through it, and that was the vibe I got. And then I saw that report this morning. I'm like, well, now they're not going to. Right, because this guy's reporting that they want to, so now they won't. And it all really does depend. Like, if the tackles get drafted early, because that's what teams, then they won't have the opportunity to do it. So, like, mock drafts are crazy because you're trying to predict what you think one team will do, but that's based on what 31 other teams might do before. Like, it's an impossible task. But if the chips fall right and you see a tackle start to slide, I really think there's a decent chance that they could move up and be done, and hopefully in their minds just be done with trying to evaluate that position for a while. It makes sense this year based on everything else they've done in the offseason, because they went out and they brought everybody back. They sort of addressed all their needs. They don't have right now on this glaring need that they must solve through the draft. That also gives you strength, though, to trade down or to select just at your spots the best players you think are the best players, which they've been really good at. You know, they rebuilt a defense in a draft. So that's all out there. We can talk more about it. We got Royals talk as well coming up this hour. Stick around. It's Sports Daily on a Friday. We're getting you ready for the weekend.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period.
That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Glad to be here with you. Jacob Albrock, Tom McCaster. It is a Friday. We're getting ready for the weekend. We're having fun with the NFL draft. We still haven't just made a bold prediction on the draft, and we'll do that next week. I just like the Chiefs fascinate me because they can literally do anything. This has been a weird offseason. Like they're not pigeonholed into anything. And that's pretty wild and crazy, right? Because they can trade up, they can trade down, they can take any position and it wouldn't surprise us. Literally, they could even take a backup quarterback in the first. It wouldn't surprise. Like they could do anything.
I mean, that would surprise me a little bit if they did that.
That might surprise me a little. That's a little much. But, you know, it's a weird place to be because it doesn't really I would say pass rusher would be the need. Right. Like if you're trying to address a need for this team, it would be pass rusher. But, you know, I also think that they need to solve left tackle. So we'll see. We'll see what they do. What I don't buy into, Tommy, and we talked earlier this week with our Chiefs insider, Felix Johnson. I don't think they're taking a wide receiver. That to me does not make sense. They've got like five of them. And like, where would they play a rookie receiver again? Unless Rashee Rice, they have some indication of when he'll miss time. That's the one to me that's getting a lot of noise. Where I'm just like, but why? Why would they do that? I don't. That one doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, unless they want to stockpile young, talented, and cheap weapons offensively to surround Patrick Mahomes. I mean, I don't know if you can ever have enough of that necessarily, especially when you know what some of the top receivers around the league are getting contract-wise. I can understand that from a financial point of view, but from just a right-away usage point of view, no, that doesn't make a lot of sense for me. So would I be overly surprised if they went that direction? No, because they've went Worthy and Rice in the last two drafts early. I know Rice was a second rounder, but they've gone wide receiver early in the last 2 years. So it wouldn't surprise me one bit if either the first or second round pick was a wide receiver. Whether that's the right choice or not, probably not, at least right away. But again, stockpiling cheap weapons may not be a bad idea.
The other thing maybe on that is, I just don't, because you're going to have where, even if Rice loses time this year, I feel like they've backed that up okay. You're going to have Rice and Worthy for two more years minimum each, right? Like that's the one that's getting the run that I just am like, I don't, where would that player play for half of this season? Let's say Rice gets suspended for 8 games and they draft Luther Burden. Does he become your fifth wide receiver out of the gates? How do you even use that guy? Honestly.
Yeah.
How do you even use that guy?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that it's going to be more of a abundance of riches and try to bring him along slowly. And, you know, because remember, even though they did draft Rice and Worthy in consecutive drafts, both of those guys, they were forced into duty a little bit earlier than I think they wanted them to be. And it took them a while to get acclimated and accustomed to the NFL. I think that in an ideal world, if they were to bring in, again, I'm just saying hypothetically, a Luther Burden type guy, they would have the luxury that they haven't had in the last couple of seasons. You would think to let a wide receiver develop and not throw him into the fire right away.
The only thing, and I think that makes sense to take a receiver in the draft. I'm not saying don't take a receiver. saying, why would you take one in the first, right? Like that, because you can.
But we said that last year too, when they took Worthy in the first round and they had Rice already on the roster.
Rice,
right?
At that point, we didn't know what was happening with Rice's legal situation at that point, right? We thought he was going to get suspended like then. We didn't know this was going to drag out like that. So there were questions there. And even if there are questions there now, they have Hollywood Brown. They have Juju Smith-Schuster, who they didn't have at this time last year in the draft, I don't think. I think that came later. They have other things there to withstand the blow of a Rice absence, I think. If they knew Rice was going to be out the first 8 weeks, then okay, I could get maybe a little more on board with it. There's been nothing to indicate that, right? I think the next court cases went in December was the last we heard. So I don't think anything is going to happen urgently. I suppose if you just don't love any of the players and you absolutely love a receiver that has fallen, okay. I just don't think that player is going to help you at all. And neither would a left tackle, I suppose, either. But here, let me say it this way. The Chiefs are never going to struggle finding receivers because they always have Patrick Mahomes. So the Juju Smith-Schusters of the world feel like they'll always be there to help bail them out to some degree. But here's the other thing on that, and I'll contradict myself. You got to think about Travis Kelce's exit too. So, are you ever going to be able to replace his production at tight end? No, I don't think so. So maybe that's it too. Maybe they do want to run 4 and 5 wide receiver sets. I would say, again, you don't need to take one in the first round to accomplish that. There are more urgent things that they could accomplish through pass rusher, offensive lineman, things like that. So we'll see. Lots of options, though. They're in a position of strength. There's no question about that.
By the way, as we're talking the draft, and I know this is kind of a right turn a little bit, did you catch any of the Aaron Rodgers comments yesterday on Pat McAfee?
No. I saw it. I've seen it. I just don't care, honestly. What did he say? He pretty nonchalant, pretty typical Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, pretty typical Aaron Rodgers. I mean, saying that he's not ruling out retirement as a possibility. He said that he's doing things on his own time. He's had some personal things going on. He doesn't feel like he's holding anybody hostage. I think he is. I mean, I think that the Steelers are a team that
sure
absolutely would like to know the direction that Rodgers is going to go before the draft, ideally. But typical Aaron Rodgers, I mean, kind of self-absorbed a little bit, it's his universe and has a hard time with visibility outside of that and like how things impact other people. But he didn't rule out retirement as a potential, he was critical of the Jets and the way that the Jets exit happened and the way that he was informed about that, which is not surprising. Typical Aaron Rodgers stuff.
I mean, is anybody surprised?
No.
The only thing I'll say about that, and the Steelers, we're not past the draft, so it's not, they haven't done nothing, but you can't be the Steelers have tethered themselves to this. I don't think they're dumb enough to not have a backup plan. I think they'll want an answer before the draft. And if they don't get an answer before the draft, they're going to draft a quarterback and they'll be done with it. And Aaron Rodgers won't have a place to play. Right?
You're right. Now, the one thing that he did say is that it's not about the money for him and that he would play. I think the number he said he would play for $10 million. And I'm like, you know what? If he'd play for $10 million, then if I'm the Vikings, I know they've got J.J. McCarthy, but $10 million is a bargain to at least kick the tires on a 42-year-old Aaron Rodgers and see what he can do out there.
But would he go there knowing he's a placeholder?
Right.
Maybe he would.
Yeah, I don't know.
I pondered that earlier in the offseason. That's great news. But again, it's not the point. That's not why. Like Pittsburgh feels like they can win a Super Bowl. They have to feel that way. And so like you can't just sit there. Like if he's not there by the draft and you're Pittsburgh, and this is a draft where quarterbacks may slide to some degree, this is the year to go trade up for a quarterback if you're Pittsburgh, in my opinion.
Yeah, but if they feel like they're a quarterback away from a Super Bowl, are they a rookie quarterback away from a Super Bowl? I think that becomes the big question. Like with the roster that they've assembled, which is good and should be better than what it was a year ago, all in, all together.
Yeah.
Whether it's a Shedeur Sanders or a Jalen Milroe or, you know, whoever, like Jackson Dart, whoever these other guys are, Tyler Slough, do they feel like a rookie quarterback can lead a team to a championship if they're ready to go this season? That becomes the big question.
I don't know that you can think that way. I don't know that you can think that way because, I mean, look, not that, and I'm not saying any of these quarterbacks are Jaden Daniels, but what I mean, like, you have to at least because let me ask you this: does a rookie quarterback, whichever one it is, do they give you more than Russell Wilson gave you last year? Because I think they could. I think they absolutely could. The way we've seen some rookies be able to come in year one and have impacts. What if you get CJ Stroud? What if you get Jaden Daniels, right? Like, what if you get one of these rookies that has come in and been high? What if you get Bo Nix, right? Nobody thought, but so I would say for the Steelers specifically, you know, for the rest of us watching, can a rookie quarterback go in there and help them win a Super Bowl? Yeah, probably not. But for them, a rookie quarterback can come in and give them more than what they've had at quarterback for like 5 years. So I think if you're the Steelers, you got to think about it that way. Like if Aaron Rodgers doesn't give you an answer, and I don't even know where Pittsburgh picks in the first round off the top of my head. The question becomes, let's say it's...
Isn't it like 21 or 22, I think, is where their pick is?
Let's say it's Shedeur Sanders. Let's say, because it's probably, you know, Cam Ward will probably end up going first and all this. Let's say it's Shedeur Sanders or even Jackson Dart. Well, two scenarios for you. It's Shedeur Sanders and you got to trade up to 5 to get him. Would you do that if you're Pittsburgh? What if it's trade up to 10 to get Jackson Dart? I mean, I think you really start to consider that if you're Pittsburgh.
I mean, really, that's the tough position that Pittsburgh is in, just considering the fact that they, as you mentioned, they're tied, for better or for worse, to the decision that Aaron Rodgers makes. And that's why if I'm a NFL GM, for the last, like, I mean, even going back to the last couple of years that Rodgers was in Green Bay and all the drama that happened with the front office in Green Bay, all the drama going to the Jets, that tenure and now this. Like, I don't care if he's a future Hall of Famer. I don't care if he's a former MVP, a Super Bowl champion one time, like all of that. It's a headache, and it's a pain in the butt to be tied to Aaron Rodgers and to be, you know, at the mercy of the decision that he makes and his process and how he does it, because it is it's frustrating because you've got an organizational goal. You've got organizational things that you have to accomplish. And you have to take the good with the bad. You have to take the annoyance with the talent. And it becomes a risk-reward. It becomes a cost-benefit analysis. Like, is the cost of Aaron Rodgers, and I'm not even talking dollars and cents, is the cost of Aaron Rodgers and having his whole aura and everything that comes along with him, is it worth the potential benefit that you might get? And what is that benefit? I mean, that benefit has diminished over the years. I think that everybody could say that. Like, and so you have to weigh that, and it becomes really, really difficult to assess and evaluate. It would be hard for me as an NFL GM to want to swallow that and take that on and play that game.
I mean, I think if you're Pittsburgh looking at the quarterbacks they have on the roster, it would be yes. It's worth it because they don't have anybody else. But is it a better option than trading up and drafting a rookie or crossing your fingers and holding your breath that a quarterback slides to them at 21? Who's the fourth quarterback right now on boards? Is it Quinn Ewers? Like, I don't know who it is after Ward,
it's probably
Sanders.
It's probably Milroe. It's probably Jalen Milroe.
Okay, if it's Jalen Milroe, which I don't really like him as a pro prospect, but whatever. Let's say those guys one of those guys is sitting at 20. Jalen Milroe, those three other guys have gone, or it's Jalen Milroe or Quinn Ewers at 21.
Just take him. Just take the quarterback. Have yourself a little backup plan. I mean, I think that I would much prefer the Steelers to do that. If I'm the GM, I would do that as opposed to trading up.
Well, because you don't like the quarterbacks.
I don't like the quarterbacks. I mean, that's just me. I don't like the quarterbacks. I wouldn't trade up. Unless I knew that whether it was Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders were a sure thing, like a Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels type sure thing. And I don't think that either one of those guys is. I'm not saying that Ward or Sanders can't be a good professional, but I don't think it's guaranteed at the level that some of these other guys have been. I wouldn't trade up for them. You know, I would stay at 21, 22, and I would get, if Milroe or whoever it is available, or even if, like, best case scenario for the Steelers is that Sanders slides all the way down to 21.
That's not going to happen.
In a lot of mocks, he has slid. I'm not discounting that possibility. That could happen. That's the best case scenario for the Steelers, but I wouldn't trade up to get him.
I would trade up to 10 to get him. Rather, if it's my opinion, I would rather have him at 10 and trade up than to take Milroe at 21. Just because I don't think Milroe's going to do much in the NFL. And obviously you know this and the listeners know this. I think Shedeur Sanders is going to be an above average NFL quarterback, which is much better than the Steelers have had in a long time. I mean, you got to go back, like, don't go back to just Ben Roethlisberger, because Ben Roethlisberger at the end was he was terrible. So you got to go way back to when the last time they had, I mean, Russell Wilson last year was serviceable, right? He had an okay year. I don't know. I mean, Rodgers at $10 million is the best option. Let me put that out there. That's the best option still, which is why they're probably still putting up with this. But Rodgers at $10 million. I mean, heck yeah. But give me that if I'm Pittsburgh. And you can still do that and take one of these other guys. But I don't – Shedeur, I hope this noise is real and Shedeur slides and he has a chance to go to a good team and doesn't get stuck on a crap team that sucks. I hope that happens. That would be the best thing that ever happened to him. A kid that, you know, like, it doesn't, again, we talk about this, like, situations in life, like, he doesn't need the money of being the top whatever. I'd much rather see him end up in a good situation because I think he's got the tools to be good. So,
I mean, I do think I really, the more that this plays out, I think that my gut tells me that the Giants are going to take Sanders, and then they're going to have a huge quarterback discussion with Wilson and Winston, and then they're going to have a lot of quarterbacks on that roster. But I think that that's going to be the most likely scenario. I mean, the Steelers are not going to trade up that far to get Sanders, and so I do think that more than likely they will stand pat and they'll wait for whatever quarterback is left at 21.
The Giants taking Sanders and letting him sit for 6 to 8 games behind those guys with Malik Nabers in the room, like, I love that for Sanders. I do, because he wouldn't have to start right away, which you never, to me, like, if you can avoid that for rookies, that's always a pretty good situation. I think it makes sense. And if you're the Giants and you're trying to make a decision on Shedeur Sanders, who cares if you have Jameis Winston on the roster, right? Like, that shouldn't preclude you from taking a quarterback you think is worth taking at 3 because Jameis Winston's in the way. And I love Jameis Winston. He's one of my favorite players in the league. I think he's fantastic. I think he's so fun to watch and a great character in the league. But he's not holding them back from taking Shedeur Sanders. Neither is Russell Wilson. They'll either take Sanders because they like him or they won't. He's not falling out of it. Like, no. Some of this stuff. Tommy had to step out and hit the DMV. It's me right now. We'll wait on Jalen Thompson. He's a little behind schedule, so we're trying to get connected with him right now. But we can talk Royals either way as they fall again in Detroit. And that has been the theme here. Now losers of 4 in a row, losers of 6 out of their last 7 games. It's not been good lately, and it's not been good on this road trip. Only one win so far. It's a 10-game trip, and they're all, you know, against teams that are postseason teams. So it is a tough spot in the schedule. But when we think about the Royals and the expectations that many of us have set on them, I told you I thought they were, you know, a World Series representative type team out of the American League. These kinds of stretches do get a little curious, and it's been a lot of things. We've highlighted the trouble bridging the starting pitching to the pitching by the end of a game that we feel like they're strong at, but that has not been the biggest problem. The biggest problem clearly has been this team's ability to drive in runs. They're getting base runners one out of their last 21 with runners in scoring position is wild. We know this isn't a team. This team is not going to hit for power. Not much. They've got three guys in the lineup that can hit for decent power. Bobby Witt Jr., Salvador Perez, who's been off to a slow start, and Vinny Pasquantino. And, you know, power's not even Vinny's game as much as driving in runs typically is. He's been such a good run producer up there. It's just not really happening for anybody. Bobby Witt Jr. has been fine. And they have a lot of holes in the lineup. And so I don't know what the answer is. My guess is they'll get back home. It's a streaky team. They'll start to hit. They'll be okay. But my bigger concern is it good enough now when we get to the end of this season for them to end up being where we thought they could be? And I don't know if I think the answer to that question as it currently stands is yes. So what are the options then? And what does the team need to be thinking about, the organization need to be thinking about? Well, the trade deadline. And I've told you before that I feel like this is a year for the Royals that they're going to be hyper-aggressive at the deadline. They're going to, if needed, be willing to sort of push them all in. They did that to a large degree last year. I think they do it again. But the question with that becomes, can they afford to wait until July? Is what we're seeing a bigger issue? Again, I don't think it is. That's what gets really hard about this early season evaluation. Because last year, it's essentially the same offense, plus Jonathan India at the top, who's been okay there, better than what they had a year ago. So it shouldn't be. Can they afford to risk it, though? You know, can they wait that long? Or do they need to do something sooner? Can they afford to try and deal with it and it cost them games in a hyper-competitive division and a hyper-competitive American League? I don't know that the answer to that question is yes. You know, it may be a year where you need 88 wins to get into the postseason, even with an expanded playoff in Major League Baseball. So then, okay, if you can't wait that long, if you can't get it to that point and sort of sustain until you have teams willing to trade players away, what is then the next best option? And that's where we get into this discussion about Jack Caglione. He's not right now doing things at the minor league level that are like forcing the Royals' hand, but he's hitting for a ton of power and the ball flies off his bat. He's in Double A. He's got a lot to prove there. But if he can prove it over 2, 3, 4 weeks, if he can, you know, do those things, that's where all this talk of he's not playing any corner outfield, that's what doesn't make sense to me. I don't know if that ultimately ends up being his spot in the big leagues. But at this point, based on what we've seen at the big league level, honestly, like, what harm would it do to Jack Caglione to run him out there in Double A and say, let's see if you can play right field or left field. Let's just see if you can do it. I mean, the dude's a professional baseball player. At some point in his life, I'm sure that he has played the outfield. I assume. That's what I don't understand. I'm not saying he ends up as a corner outfielder, as a big leaguer. I'm no, you know, player development guy. But just on the surface, what would it hurt in Double A to have him play some games in the outfield and see how he does? Isn't that what Double A's for? Is that really going to hold his offensive development back? That would be the thing I think that critics to that kind of a move would say, is that you can't have anything holding back on offense. And I guess my answer to that would be, if him trying to play left field holds him back on offense, they've got bigger issues. I don't know why that would. Why would that hold him back offensively? Because he's thinking too much about trying to play a corner outfield spot? Like, that doesn't make sense to me. So we'll see. But the only answer outside of some of these guys just sort of getting it together quickly, to me right now is Cags. And if it's not that, then it's not going to be anything that can be addressed for a while, because it'll have to be addressed at the trade deadline. And while I think the Royals will be very ready to make that kind of a move, you can't really make it for another 2 months at best, right? You're not going to be able to do that. And can they afford this kind of stretch more than right now? Like, can they do, how many times can they have stretches like this where they just can't drive in any runs? And all of a sudden they look at a road trip where they've lost 6 of 7. Can they really afford to do that? That's the kind of thing to me that the Royals have to really pay attention to and think about and try to evaluate as they make decisions up and down the roster to solve this problem that they have right now. We get Jackson Jobe and Cole Reagans tonight. That is a clear pitching advantage. Jobe's been fine for Detroit. He's been pretty good. It's a clear pitching advantage, though, for the Royals. It's a game they need to win. Jobe, his last time out, went 6 innings, didn't allow a run. He hadn't allowed more than 3 runs in any start this year. So he's not been, I mean, he's not been lights out, but he's been okay. He's been fine. They ought to be able to score on Jackson Jobe. You've got Reagans on the mound. You go Reagans, Lugo, Waka. The Royals need to have an opportunity to win the next 3 games. And they need to do it behind. And that's the other frustrating part about this. It's... like, look at, listen to some of these scores in this stretch of these losses. 6-3, 4-1, 4-2, 4-3. Yesterday was 6-1. They got their butts kicked a little bit yesterday. But they've had opportunities to win all these games. And they haven't won any of them in this little run. So Reagans is on the bump, but give him more than 2 runs. Like, we need a Royals win badly. We need like a 2-0. Like, come on. Score a little bit. This team is capable. The offense was not something that was supposed to be an issue this year. Vinny Pasquantino is healthy. We saw Melendez and Renfro both end the year stronger than they started it. And they added Jonathan India at the top of the lineup. And oh, by the way, now they figured out a way to get Michael Garcia to play center field. Like, what a development that is. And they just can't do it. Like, it's just crazy. It doesn't make sense. This thing the team was so good at last year, driving in runs and being opportunistic, being this bad for this stretch this year, doesn't make a lot of sense. They got to get it figured out. I don't know what they can do. They need a day off probably in a bad way. The next time they get one of those is Monday. And then they get 6 straight at home, right? And then, you get the Rockies and the Astros. Those are winnable games. For sure, they're winnable games. They don't play the White Sox, if that's what you're looking for, until May 5th. So it's going to be a while there. But they got to get it figured out. This has been very frustrating to see the Royals struggle through this way. And it doesn't feel right. It still feels like this is a really good team. So they'll play. We'll catch a lot of the Royals this weekend. You got them Saturday. They'll join in progress over on KNSS. They get day baseball, and then Sunday right here on KFH on Easter Sunday. So a lot of opportunities here. This is what they want. They get 3 games at Detroit, but they've got their dudes, right? Reagans, Lugo, Waka. You've got your dudes on the hill. Sunday, you'll stare Skubal, who's as good as there is in baseball right now, in the face. Probably adds a little more pressure into the games where you have Reagans and Lugo going. Right? Doesn't it? I think it does. I absolutely think it does. And they've got to get it done. They have to get it done. 5:40 first pitch tonight. Jackson Jobe. Again, he was good his last time out. That's a gettable pitcher. Go win this game. Stop this bleeding. Royals trying to get it done. Playing tonight. Isn't baseball the best and the worst all at the same time? Isn't it? We do this. There's 162 games. Baseball people live and die by what happens in single games in April, right? It's tough. But the Royals have got to get it done. A couple other headlines for you yesterday. Roster moves. Well, really just one actual completed roster move, and that was the Shockers. We talked about this in the last hour, but just real quick, Dylan Batee is coming over from Temple. He was a pretty highly regarded high school prospect. Didn't do a ton last year at Temple, but a new opportunity there. It puts a roster on the floor that's getting interesting for Wichita State. It's hard to set expectations with this roster because really everybody that is on the team currently is going to step into a much larger role than they've ever played before, with the exception of Giles coming in from UNC Greensboro, who did score quite a bit for them. He's a good shooter. Like he's right now, if you looked at all of this, the guy offensively that you would look to on the roster early to get the points. You think Kendall out of Barton Junior College star could do something, but again, that's making a level jump we're just not real sure about. And then they brought in a big time defender in Boyd. Batee didn't score really do much at all for Temple, so I don't know how you set his expectations any higher than Zion Pipkin, TJ Williams, Noah Hill, any of these other guys. Tyrus Rothen-Mays, Joy Govida is another guy who could potentially do something. But right now, the Wichita State roster is a little different than we're used to seeing in college basketball, and they still have four spots to fill. But it's a little bit different because there's that experience. You know, teams that start over are starting over, but they're bringing in pretty experienced players typically. Wichita State hadn't done that yet. Not for the most part. Outside of, a couple of guys, this right now looks a little bit different. I don't know how much room there is still to wiggle out there. What's in the portal? Again, I say this all the time. It's impossible to follow it. That'll do it for a Friday edition of Sports Daily. You've got Shocker Baseball tonight and tomorrow, 5:15 first pitch tonight here on KFH. We will be back Monday to talk about everything. Can the Royals get it turned around? It's NFL Draft Week. Should be a fun week of shows. For Tommy, for Max, I'm Jacob. We'll see you Monday.